first item on the agenda is we do have a quorum, and the second item is approval of the minutes for Wednesday, March 19th, 2025. Vice Chair Myers.
I'll move the minutes for March 19th, 2025.
Vice Chair Myers moves the minutes for Wednesday, March 19th, 2025. All those in favor, say aye.
The chair should turn on his microphone. Just to restate for the record, Vice Chair Myers moves the minutes for Wednesday, March 19th, 2025. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. And the meeting is called to order. There is a quorum. A few pretty busy agenda here this morning. We will start with House File 639, Representative Murphy. Do you want to move your bill 639 to Ways and Means?
Yes, Mr. Chair, yes.
And there is a DE amendment. Please explain your DE amendment.
The DE amendment just adds language that would establish where the money's coming from, and also looks at adding some information to let people know how it's changed overall. So if there's a single incident and you're free for 5 years, it's sufficient.
We'll move the let's approve the DE amendment first, and then you can explain your bill.
Okay.
So basically it's an author's amendment. Any questions on the DE amendment by members? The DE1.
Mr. Chair, since the DE1 is going to be the bill, can he explain it before we vote on it?
Okay, I guess a little bit more. I wanted to move it first, and then we'll. Okay, so Representative Murphy moves the DE1 amendment. Please explain your DE1, or we also have House Research if you want a little bit more technical explanation. Mr. Burris?
Maybe I could have some help from Mr. Burris. I don't seem to have that language okay. Right in front of me.
And then maybe move the microphone a little closer to you if you...
Thank you.
We got you. Mr. Burris, please walk us through the DE1 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the DE1 amendment has a couple of changes. The first in paragraphs A and B makes technical structural changes to the direction given to the Department of Public Safety on the rulemaking to have a split out of the two different circumstances related to when a physician statement is no longer required. So the substance of this is the same as the underlying bill. It just changes the structural arrangement of that. And then on page 2, paragraph C, starting at 2.4, this clarifies that the requirements of the revised rules don't apply in some circumstances involving commercial driver's license holders. And then the other change is found in section 2, starting at 2.14, page 2, line 14. And this adds an appropriation of $11,000 in fiscal year 2026 from the driver and vehicle services operating account for the rulemaking costs. That reflects what costs are identified in the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Section 2 talks about the fiscal part of it, kind of self-explanatory, but does any member want any further explanation about the fiscal aspects from House Fiscal? Hearing none, Representative Murphy, please reintroduce and explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill directs the Minnesota Commissioner of Public Safety to update existing rules regarding individuals who experience loss of consciousness or voluntary control due to medical conditions, especially epilepsy, seizure disorders, or single non-epileptic seizure. The changes would allow a physician to confirm a person's eligibility to drive without further medical review if they meet certain long-term stability criteria. Currently, under state statute of Minnesota rules, when an individual has an episode that has been caused by loss of consciousness through a seizure or something else, they need to be examined by a physician and fill out a form every year. And that can vary a little bit, but prove that there's not a danger to the public and to be able to drive. Currently, the Minnesota rules, there is a special exemption that if you have been free of an episode for more than 4 years, Then you need to be examined every 4 years. But you do need to submit, you can submit an annual physician statement that can be required for you to fill out. The challenge is that individuals have been a one-time issue, have been told by their physicians that they will never have the issue again, and their physician doesn't think they need to visit again. They are still required to fill out this annual physician statement. And it can vary a little bit. Our testifier will talk about some of the subjectivity that physicians have, but basically they're required to continue filling out this form. It creates an expense for Minnesotans who suffer from a one-time loss of consciousness. It creates an unnecessary burden for healthcare providers. After a discussion that's been taking place for the last year between public safety and MNDOT, the language you see before you is today based on their recommendations. It would create two additional paths for individuals who have had a loss of consciousness event to be able to keep their license. In the first situation, if they have had just a single event and have been medication-free for 5 years with no incidents, a physician says that they are no longer in danger of having an event in the future, then they are good and they don't have to review every 4 years, and then they wouldn't have to fill out that annual or go see a doctor for an annual statement. The second consideration is if they've had multiple events and then have been an incident and medication-free for 10 years, and the physician says that they are no longer a danger of having the event in the future, then they are good and they don't have to be reviewed every 4 years or seek that annual submission, the physician statement. So that's about the bill. I do have a testifier here that I would like to have explain his situation and how it affects him.
Before we go to the testifier, you've moved the DE1 amendment. We will vote on that to get the bill technically in the shape that you just described. Any questions about the DE1 amendment? Otherwise, all in favor of the DE1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. To the testifier is Mr. Lemke. Is that correct?
Correct.
Welcome to the committee. Just pull the microphone up so we can hear you. And then before you proceed, just state your name for the record. It's recorded so we know who's speaking. And then proceed with your testimony and try to keep it under 2 minutes. Thank you.
2 minutes? Got it. Jonathan Lemke. Mr. Chair and committee members, I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak on my personal experience with the loss of consciousness or voluntary control requirements. I am a lifelong resident of the state of Minnesota, and I currently live and work in St. Paul. 25 years ago, I was diagnosed with complex partial seizures. Because of this medical condition, I lost my career as a commercial truck driver. I count myself as one of the lucky ones. I have not had a seizure since May 2003, or almost 22 years. I've been off all anti-seizure medication since October 2009, or 15 years. My neurologist released me from his care in October 2009 with no follow-up visits required. However, because of the way the loss of consciousness and voluntary control form is written, I am required every 4 years to go see a neurologist that does not treat me for a condition that I no longer have and to fill out the form. As stated on the form, failure to provide and return the requested data in 30 days will result in the denial of your license request and cancellation of your driving privileges. I would like to point out that not only does this requirement take time out of my day, I have to pay a copay, my insurance has to pay for an office visit, and I have to take up the valuable time of a neurologist that could be seeing someone that needs their help. In conclusion, for me and people like me that have years, if not decades, of being off anti-seizure medication and seizure-free, I don't understand how requiring me every 4 years to have a neurologist fill out a form for a medical condition that I do not have and that he is not treating me for helps keep the driving public safer. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Mr. Lemke. Members, are there any...
Wow, I can't turn the microphone on today. anybody else wanting to testify from the public or in the committee room? Seeing none, members, have any questions? Representative Green?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for bringing this bill forward, Representative Joy. I just had a quick question in regards to what Joy Murphy. I didn't even catch it. I was like, why is everyone laughing
at me? I'm sorry, Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair.
Just roll with it that I was intentional because that's funnier.
Yeah.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. My question is just, I just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. I have actually heard of issues with constituents in the same situation or a similar situation. I have a question. Is there any alignment with the chances of having seizures when you look at, like, when you were released, right? Your chances of having seizures are almost the same as anybody, right? Does that make sense? Like, I'm just trying to say, like...
To me?
Yes, to you. Oh, okay. Well, either one.
We'll speak through the chair, but let her finish the question, and then I'll direct the question.
Yeah, I guess I was just trying to look at... So if you are released from a neurologist, then your chances of having a seizure are probably minimal to none in that sense, which is the same as every other constituent, right? Just someone who's walking around. If anything, maybe less so then. So that's my question.
Mr. Lemke?
Short answer, correct.
Yeah. Any follow-up? Or?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. I could wait, way in quick, too.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Green. I have a son that has had seizures when he was little. And then we did go through a complete medical process. He was on medication for a long time. And at the end of that, when they're all done, they say there's no added risk of seizure for you. And that was 27 years ago, and he hasn't had one ever since. So I think I think you're very true on that. So,
seeing no other member questions, I appreciate your time and advocating for this kind of a unique situation that a lot of us don't always give a lot of thought to. So thank you for being here. Thank you for the bill. Representative Murphy, do you want to renew your motion to move this to the Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, yes. Thank you.
Representative Murphy renews his motions for House File 639 as amended to be moved to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes. The bill is on to Ways and Means. Next, members, we will have House File 1264, which is being substituted to, do we do that here, committee? To Senate File 1075?
Yes.
Representative Joy Murphy will send this to the General Register. So Representative Joy, we've got, you're going to move Senate File 1075 to the General Register. That is my motion.
That is my motion.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Please,
does it have to be carried? Not at the moment?
Or just
take it up?
No, it's all set. Okay. Just all right, please introduce Senate File 1075, Representative Joy.
Okay, so this bill here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill here is, you know, when somebody has suffered a traumatic brain injury or something, you know, they can get restrictions of tints put on their vehicles for bright lights, sunglasses, whatever it is. And every 2 years they go in and have to get this renewed. So they have to make an appointment, go in, medical costume. This would change the language that when the doctors come back and say that this is a permanent, basically, disability they're going to have, that it would allow them to have a permanent license that they carry or a prescription from the doctor saying they can have these tents in their vehicles. And with me today, I got a testifier, Dave Sutherland, that will give us some testimony on this. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sutherland, welcome to the committee. If you saw the previous bill, identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony, please.
David Sutherland. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify and address this committee. I'd like to provide a brief background as to why I'm here today. In February of 2021, my wife, Patty, had a serious fall in Austin, Texas. We had returned from Texas 4 days later on a Sunday, and the next day my son had a junior varsity basketball game. We had planned on staying for the varsity game, but as things go in between the games, the bands play, there's loud music, the kids are louder, And my wife couldn't stand that, so she went out into the hallway, and a short time later, we left. On the way home, we had to make a stop at the St. Cloud Hospital emergency room, as Patty had a massive headache. After x-rays, two CT scans, and multiple medications to reduce the pain, it was determined she had suffered a serious concussion from the fall. Almost immediately and in the following days, we learned that riding in a car and even wearing sunglasses was not enough to prevent the bright light from causing her to have a headache or even a migraine. After one of her appointments with her doctor, Patty was given a prescription for the appropriate and recommended amount of window tint for our vehicles. Since then, after seeing many medical doctors and neurologists and going through different types of treatments and medications, it was determined she would have a permanent brain injury. At the time of my retirement from Minnesota State Patrol in 2006, the information provided on the letter prescription from her neurologist complied with the Minnesota Statute 169.71. In August 2025, Patty was stopped by a state trooper in our area for the violation of the window tint. Patty provided to the state trooper the letter from the doctor, which specifically stated that it was lifetime. During the traffic stop, Patty was informed by the trooper that the statute was now required, the prescription had to be renewed every 2 years. After some research, I learned that the statute had changed in 2008, requiring the renewal of the prescription every 2 years. Shortly thereafter, Patty made a request through her clinic's MyChart and made contact with her neurologist to get a new prescription. Again, the doctor put on the prescription that it was a lifetime injury. At that time, I contacted my local senator and representative on the situation to see if 169.71 could be amended to when a doctor or physician indicates the medical condition is permanent, the prescription is lifetime. As I read House File 1243 and Senate File 1075, the amended changes are precise and appropriate. I further believe that our medical professionals need not to be burdened each time a prescription needs to be updated when the injury or medical condition is permanent. I'm sure Patty's not the only one in the state of Minnesota that has this type of injury and fall into this category. I again thank the committee members for my time here to address the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Sutherland, and thank you for your service as a state trooper. We appreciate that. Member questions, we have Representative Cagle. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. Just kidding. Representative Joy. No, I remember, thank you for bringing this forward. I remember when we did this bill a couple years back and adding some of the prescriptions for medical needs and making sure that like a PCA could have those as well. And this was something that my niece needed throughout her lifetime, and it wasn't an issue that was going to go away. So it would have helped. She passed away a few years back, but you know, this was something that would have been one less little task that my in-laws would have had to do. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Thank you, Mr. Sutherland. Do you want to renew your motion? Is there any other member question? Otherwise, any other public testimony? Otherwise, please renew your motion for Senate File 1075.
I renew my motion that this goes to the General Register.
Representative Joy renews his motion for Senate File 1075 to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Representative Green, yes. Just proceed to the front and two testifiers. Next we have House File 1087. Representative Green, we are ready for you. I want to move House File 1087 to be laid over.
Thank you so much, Chair Kosnick, for hearing this bill. I really appreciate having time to talk about this this bill. So commuters from 82 out of 87 counties in Minnesota use I-494 between 169 and the airport on a daily basis. The I-94 Corridor Commission, a transportation management organization that is formed by member cities, including Bloomington, Richfield, Edina, Eden Prairie, and Minnetonka, have been working together for the past decade. do two goals. One, address traffic congestion on the 494 corridor, and two, reduce the amount of cut-through and spillover traffic on city streets that occurs when 494 is congested. House File 1087 is asking for a continuation of this $300,000 per year investment in state funding. One of the key successes of the 494 Commission is an outreach program called Commuter Services. Commuter Services engage employers along 494 to offer commute programs and to connect employers with resources to slow the growth of congestion, like helping people find alternatives to driving alone. The actions of the 494 Corridor Commission are proactive. They work on reducing traffic congestion and also improving air quality, key actions in helping to achieve Minnesota's emission reduction goals. I have two testifiers here today, both Melissa Madison and Rebecca Shack, and I will let them introduce themselves, and they are going to share about the positive impact of this work.
Thank you, Representative Green. We will start with Melissa Madison. Please introduce yourself for the record, state who you're with, and then proceed with your testimony. Try to keep it under 2 minutes, please.
Yes, Chair.
I think you can just speak into the microphone. You may need to move it closer.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Kosnick. My name is Melissa Madison, and I'm with the 494 Corridor Commission and Commuter Services. We also want to thank Representative Green and Co-Chair Kosnick for your support. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Commuter Services provides individualized resources to help drive-along commuters find a carpool partner or join or start a vanpool. Receive customized transit itineraries with correlating transit schedules and two free passes to give it a try, as well as bicycle commuting resources and telework resources. We work with 1,200 employers to help us reach their employees with these resources, and we help commuters try a mode other than driving alone. In your packet is our annual results summary, where you can see in an average year, we convert 5,500 drive-along commuters into an alternative, including carpool, vanpool, bicycle, transit, and telework, which results in an estimated 56 million vehicle miles avoided as a direct result of our outreach. We survey commuters at the time that we help them to learn their primary commute mode, which is 95% of the time it's drive-alone. And we survey them again after we assist them with customized one-on-one resources to learn if they were able to try the alternative that we helped them with and are they able to continue using that mode with any frequency, which is how we're able to report back to you 5,500 individuals convert from driving alone in an average year. The 56 million vehicle miles avoided equates to over 23,000 metric tons of CO2 emissions saved, and it would take over a million mature trees to achieve the same result. Commuter Services is largely funded by a federal congestion mitigation air quality grant, and our five member cities provide the local match. However, the local cities are not able to keep up with the local match required, and we have come to the state four times, and we thank you for your previous funding allocations. The legislature has awarded us the funding with bipartisan support. In the past two sets of funding, we were able to help 504 companies on a statewide basis with their telework programs to give them training on best practices, to train managers how to manage by deliverables. And last biennium, Representative Bjorn Olson had asked us to become a clearinghouse to advertise telework and hybrid jobs in Minnesota to make it easier for people who live in rural locations to find a telework position. We were able to add over 300 Minnesota companies that hire teleworkers as a result. We've posted this on our Twin Cities telework website. On a small budget, we are successful at helping reduce traffic congestion, and we're asking for the state's help to continue this work. Our work aligns with the state's goal to reduce vehicle miles traveled, which will thereby reduce transportation emissions. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Ms. Rebecca Shack.
Jack, yes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Please proceed and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Councilmember Rebecca Shack. I'm a council member for the City of Minnetonka. I've been on the Minnetonka City Council for about 8 years, and I've served as the chair of the I-494 Corridor Commission for the past 5 years. Our commission work as the five member cities, we see ourselves as stewards of 494, although as Representative Green indicated, there are folks traveling from across the state through this corridor each and every day, 85 out of the 87 counties. This corridor hosts more jobs, our section of corridor hosts more jobs than both downtowns combined. Of course, we have people from across the state traveling through, and our primary goal, as Ms. Madison indicated, is really to reduce congestion along that stretch of the highway. Freeway. In Minnetonka, we take it very seriously. We have a financial support for the organization, but we're unable to sustain with the member cities the work that we do without the support from the state as well. It's really important to us both from an economical standpoint. We believe we take very seriously supporting the businesses that bring jobs to all of these Minnesotans, and we also offer some services to residential multi-housing units. So it's important for our organization to continue to receive the funding. We're so appreciative of the funds we've received in the past, and in order to keep doing this great work, we rely on the funds in the future. The last thing I will say is we're so grateful that the work on 494 is being done, but that is not helping congestion through the construction period, and we're able to offer help to commuters and to businesses along that corridor by through the work that we do. With Part 2 being funded, fully funded at this point, there will continue to be construction along 494, I believe, through 2029. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that testimony. We'll go to member questions, or is there anybody else from the public that wishes to testify? We'll go to Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is a question for Councilmember Shack. The construction is generally an HOV lane, correct? Is that? And that's going on. I drive down there too. But it's from where? From 100 to Cedar?
Council member, would you like to address the construction and what's going on there?
Yeah,
update us on the construction if you aren't familiar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson. It's a pretty complex project, and I would be lying if I said I know all of I know all the ins and outs on off the top of my head. But there is the addition of an HOV lane, but that is by far not the only work. There's some infrastructure work being done. Right now, the biggest piece of the project is a flyover lane from 35W to across 494, so that will kind of unwind some of the congestion, and really that clog at 494 and 35W should be alleviated significantly. The whole scope of phase one and phase two of the project is really airport to Eden Prairie, and phase one is airport to 169, and then phase two will begin, I believe, in 2027.
Well, thank you, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, and phase two is what?
Council member.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson. I'm not as familiar. We do get updates from MnDOT. Okay. I'm not as familiar with the ins and outs of that project because it is still being fully developed. Okay. But it will continue the HOV lane as well, and there's some expansion and some kind of untangling that's going to happen in that project as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you. I mean, I'm just curious, do we have any idea about how much that, like, adding the HOV and how much this construction is going to increase capacity? Because I think it's greatly needed. And maybe you're not the right person. I apologize. But
Council member, if we won't hold you to specific details, but if you could comment on the overall project, I guess, is the question.
Thank you, Chair Representative Anderson. I don't have that data. Ms. Madison might have it. I can certainly defer to her.
Ms. Madison, if you do, or we can get it offline as well, but just general comments if you don't.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't want to lead you in the wrong direction, with a guess.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. That's all I have, so thanks.
Yeah, we can ask MnDOT a little bit more. It's a major project, and if I remember correctly, was one of the 17th most congested interchanges at 494 and 35 in the country. So we were very happy to get that project underway. And it's a little painful living through it right now, Representative Green, but I think Minnesota travelers will be well served once that's done. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I was reading this thing about 56 million vehicle miles avoided. And that's one thing I always follow a lot when we're looking at things like this, because again, we have to fund roads and bridges. And as we cut these miles out, you know, that equates, if you did a 20 mile per gallon, it cuts about $798,000 out of gas tax. So that's one thing when we're moving forward with different plans is how, you know, I know there's different ways on how to fund roads and bridges, but that's something we always got to be very cautious of as we move forward, because, you know, that's real money when we're moving that. So that's always something I kind of look at when we're trying to get more commuter, and it is congested. I know when I leave my district and get back down here, and when we leave on Thursdays, there's a lot of traffic there. But that's just something I always look at when we're doing this, is what we could possibly in the future look at, because roads and bridges need to get funded. So it's just something to be considered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Joy. I did have a question, seeing no other member questions. Is there additional funding for this group outside of the state? You'd kind of mentioned it, that the individual businesses participate in the funding, and how much other funding is received? Is this a nonprofit as well? Ms. Madison.
Chair Klasnick, great question. We receive $375,000 per year from a federal congestion mitigation air quality grant, and our local cities raise $176,404 each year with their local dues. We would have the opportunity, if we had more local funding, to apply for carbon reduction fund program dollars, because reducing VMT and travel demand management services qualify for those funding sources.
Great, thank you for that. That's helpful. Any other member questions? Otherwise, Representative Green, we will lay your smile for the picture. We will lay your bill over for possible inclusion.
Great, thank you, Chair. Can I make one quick comment?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't go back to yes.
No, that's okay.
Please close your bill, and then we'll lay it over.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just one thing, Representative Anderson. I appreciate your question about 494. I was just talking about that with the Bloomington City Council as well, to get an update. So, if the committee is welcome to this, I will make sure we get that information out to you. I do think it's a pretty complex project. I will say yesterday I was driving up from Iowa off of 35W to get on 494 headed west, and that flyover was superb. So I don't know if anyone has gone that direction, but I it was great. So it will make a huge impact. And then the only other thing I wanted to just respond to really quick, Representative Joy, was the 56 million vehicles. And I think that's an interesting point you bring out. And, you know, something else that I would want to consider is what kind of economic impact that we're able to have, because people can get to work faster and more efficiently. So it's kind of a both and. So I just want to respond there. And that's it. I'll close the bill.
Thank you so much for your testimony and your testifiers. And Representative Green, thank you. Your bill is laid over.
Thank you very much.
Members, next we will have Olson Day in the Transportation Committee. Representative Olson, we have four bills. We will start with Senate File 1360, Implements of Husbandry. Please move your bill and proceed with your... Yeah, we don't have any amendments, and looks like we have a testifier. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to have Olson Day here at the Capitol. House File 7
House File 1360.
It's Senate File 1360, House File 739.
Yep. There it is. Yep, both of them right there. A little bit
Representative
confusing.
Olson moves Senate File number 1360. We are going to the General Register.
So this Senate file just increases the operating speed of towed vehicles of husbandry. So those are things like grain carts, hay wagons, hay rakes, implements like a plow, an anhydrous ammonia tank, all of these items that we use down on the farm. We can increase the rate from 30 miles an hour to 35. The way in which these things are created today, the grain carts that they're making today are very good. They're not going to fall apart on you with an extra 5 miles per hour rate of speed. The only kind of difference here is they're still going to need their slow-moving vehicle placard on them. It just changes kind of the scale in which they have to have left turn, right turn signals, brake lights, and illuminated license plate identifiers. So that's really all that it does. It brings it up 5 extra miles per hour to kind of alleviate some of the technological advances that we have today.
Thank you, Representative Olson. With us, we have Colonel Christina Bogoyevich. I'm getting better. Probably not perfect, but I'm getting better. Welcome back to the committee, and I believe you want to testify, so please introduce yourself and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Christina Bogoyevich. I have the honor of serving as the Colonel of the Minnesota State Patrol. As Representative Olson mentioned, this does increase the speed limit from 30 to 35 in implements of husbandry. The language also offers consistency in other statutes where implements are addressed that is currently already 35 miles per hour. So again, this just offers consistency across all language that addresses without impacting traffic safety.
Thank you for that testimony. Representative Kraft, you have a question?
I do.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm not sure for which of you. As I've learned when on City Council and others and looking at speed limits, when one increases a speed limit, it can it does increase if someone is hit by that. The difference of 5 miles an hour can be a significant difference. I think there's some data I just looked up that said a pedestrian has a 5%, 5 or 10% more chance of dying being hit someone going 35 versus 30. So you made a statement, I think, that this wouldn't impact traffic safety. So can you talk me through that? I don't have, I can see the side of this of reducing time and for farmers bringing things from place to place and how that can help save time. But I would like to maybe explore a little bit the safety side of this.
Colonel, do you have some comments?
5 miles more, yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so when I say it doesn't impact, again, going from 30 to 35, more offers consistency for those that are operating this, so they're not going back and forth between statutes, wondering if they can go 30 or if they can go 35. We have just made it 35 because you can already tow nurse tanks at 35 miles per hour. And so, and then some of this language was 30 miles per hour. And so we wanted to offer consistency through all of that.
Representative Kraft, any follow-up?
Okay, I understand. Thank you. Consistency makes sense, but just as we go, as we learn more and more and try to make our roads safer, the trend is towards slower, not faster. But I appreciate trying to, that already is a speed in many, and so we're harmonizing. Okay, thank you.
Representative Murphy, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to make a side comment on that. I've known of a couple accidents over time where actually it was because they were moving slow. So they were running from the backside. So I know of one person that I knew pretty well actually worked for me that after that he passed away because he ran into a slow-moving vehicle. So actually picking up the speed is really not a negative, I don't think. Thanks. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Any final closing comments, Representative Olson? Otherwise, renew your motion for Senate File 1630 to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll renew that motion.
Senate File 1360 to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll renew that motion. And one of the important aspects of what Representative Kraft asked, I think, that needs to be addressed is the fact that this is for these particular implements, and so personal vehicles are traveling much faster than the 35 miles an hour that we're trying to even the playing field for here. If you're in a city, you're still going to be limited by the city's speed limit. We're not saying that you can tow a manure spreader at 35 if the city says it has to be 30. This is just to try and make it across the board an even scale. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson renews his motion for Senate File 1360 to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Representative Olson, your next file is House File 2337. Please proceed with the testimony or your opening on, well, I'll have you move it to be laid over. And I would just note for the committee, there is a fiscal note is not quite done yet, so we will just lay this over. Not normally how we'd like to operate, but sometimes that's what happens. So please introduce your bill, and House File 2337 will be laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2337 is a bill that has to do with courtesy vehicles and the utilization of dealer plates on those vehicles. So if you look at the bill currently, there's a number of reasons and ways in which you can use dealer vehicles with a dealer plate on it. You can use it to go for a test drive. You can use it for business purposes. A person who works there can throw on a license plate and drive to a place for the purpose of the business's establishment on its own. This would just expand it to the utilization of the dealer plate for a courtesy vehicle, not to exceed the amount of 72 hours. So imagine your vehicle it needs an oil change, and you desperately need to get to this meeting that you need to go to, and they're a little bit backed up. So they say, drop it off here, take the courtesy vehicle, and bring it back at the end of the day. You'll be good to go. And so essentially that is all that this bill does. There's already written out ways in which dealers can get these plates, and it just expands the utilization of these courtesy plates. Courtesy vehicle, it only expands the license plates for the dealer plates to be utilized for courtesy vehicle purposes.
I believe we have public testimony from Amanda Doerr with the Auto Dealers Association. Welcome, Amanda, Ms. Doerr. Please introduce yourself and provide us with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Amanda Doerr, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. Although this underlying bill wasn't drafted by our association, we are strongly supportive of its end goal. We have been in conversation with Representative Olson and the Senate author also about some ways to potentially tweak the language that we feel would better address the problem that the dealers are experiencing, which I'll outline now. The issue is arising due to a bill passed into law last session, which required dealers to remove license plates from vehicles they purchase within 48 hours. And we didn't object to that bill and appreciated the intent of it, but there's been an unintended consequence. So when customers bring in their vehicles for service and repairs, sometimes they need a courtesy vehicle so they can carry about their day. Previously, a dealership might let a customer drive a used vehicle that was out there on their lot. But now that the plates have to be removed, they can't do that. And vehicles would need to be registered to the dealer and issued new plates rather than being held for resale in the system. And while some larger dealerships have fleets of vehicles set aside for customer courtesy use, many smaller operations don't. So the passage of the law last year has made it more difficult for these smaller dealers to assist their customers who need a courtesy vehicle. And we would like to be able to issue customers courtesy vehicle by just putting a dealer plate on a vehicle for a customer short-term use. And it was capped in this bill at 72 hours, like Representative Olson said. We see the use of courtesy vehicles as very similar to customer test drives. And existing statute already permits customer test drives up to 48 hours using dealer plates. So we appreciate the conversation here, and we'll continue working with legislators and the department on this important issue.
Thank you, Ms. Dewar. I appreciate that testimony, and I know the author is committed to working out some of the language with you. We are going to lay the bill over. We're laying this bill over. Is there any other public testimony? Any member questions? Representative Olson, can you move House File 2337 to be well, we just lay it over. We don't have to move it. I'll lay it over. We will go next to Olson, House File 1220. Please proceed to introduce that. And what are we doing with this? This one's going to the Ways and Means, so please move your bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move that House File 1220 be sent to Ways and Means. House File 1220 is a bill that helps to kind of marry up dealers on the border. So if you've got a dealership in Fargo and someone from Moorhead buys a vehicle there, current process is a little bit muddied and not easy. So if you buy the vehicle in North Dakota, then you go to your local DVS in Minnesota, and you pay the tax title and licensing fees there in order to get your Minnesota license plate, and you get your tabs, and everything's happy after that. Now, you remember the last time you bought a vehicle in the state of Minnesota, all you had to do was go there and hand them a large check, and they would take care of your tax title and licensing fee at that point in time. This is what we're going to hopefully attempt to accomplish through this, is to allow dealers outside of the state of Minnesota the ability to pay the tax title and licensing fee to the state of Minnesota to get you those plates. Is that the right bill I'm on?
Yes.
Good. That's the right one. Everyone was looking at, like, I'm seeing people in the background, like, kind of give me a questionable look.
So I had to make sure that we're making you work overtime today, Representative Olson. You're doing fine.
When Mr. Lee looks at you, just keeps looking, and then he looks down at his paper, and then he looks back up, then you really wonder if you know what you're talking.
Yeah. Representative Olson, does that complete your introduction?
That would. Yeah, it would. Maybe Mr. Lee would like to verify what I was saying is correct.
Your name's been invoked, Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, yes, I was just reading the fiscal note to prepare for any questions, but it is the fiscal note for House File 1220, and yeah.
Mr. Lee and Representative Olson, I was going to inquire about the fiscal note. I understand there's a small cost, but it's absorbed by DVS fund.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that's correct. In the fiscal note, you'll see on the second page an estimated cost of about $70,000 that is programming costs for the DVS vehicle services system. And you can see on the third page the assumed amount of programming hours. And DVS has a special revenue fund that's a result of the technology fee to pay for these changes.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. The department is here. Do you wish to testify? Do not wish to testify. Any member questions? If not, we will move House File 1220.
Mr. Chair, I believe.
You didn't testify yet. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
You're back. I'm having deja vu.
Yep.
Ms. Dewar, welcome back on House File 1220. Please provide your testimony.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, my name is Amanda Dewar, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. First of all, thank you, Representative Olson, for authoring this bill. It is fairly simple, just allowing licensed motor vehicle dealers in surrounding states to access Minnesota's electronic vehicle title registration framework, known as EVTR. This is a framework, like Representative Olson said, that lets customers get their license plate and tabs at the dealership when they purchase their vehicle, rather than needing to come back and pick up their plates or go separately to the registrar to purchase their tabs. And it's widely popular with consumers. This bill would allow Minnesotans going to Hudson, Superior, Fargo the same convenience. Many of the large dealer groups that are our members have stores in these border communities, and they'd like to access the system to serve their Minnesota customers. And it's a reciprocity issue. Wisconsin and Iowa currently allow Minnesota dealers into their versions of EVTR.
A few questions I think you might have. There is a verification process currently in place to ensure dealers have the necessary credentials before they're granted access to EVTR. I could walk through it if you want, but in the interest of time, I won't, but feel free to ask. Dealers in contiguous states would have to undergo the same verification process. Also, this is not a tax evasion issue. Minnesotans purchasing vehicles in neighboring states currently have to pay Minnesota taxes, license, registration, tabs, sales taxes, and they would continue to do so under this proposal. It would just be a lot more efficient. In the end, this bill streamlines processes for vehicle purchases that are already occurring out of state. The customer can eliminate multiple trips to a dealership and or a registrar to complete their transaction, and the department can receive information through the electronic platform rather than a bunch of paperwork from multiple different sources. So happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dewar. Appreciate that testimony. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dewar, I guess one question. You answered part of my question with the fact that it's reciprocity for Wisconsin and Iowa. Well, what about North Dakota and South Dakota? If we're going to make it easier for folks to buy cars in their dealerships, shouldn't we have the same for them here?
Ms. Dewar, please.
I mean, we could certainly engage in that conversation, and I know that our title and registration team is active in that. Like, we would like to have reciprocity across many jurisdictions, yes.
Representative Kraft?
Hey, Mr. Chair, I think we should do that.
I think we agree.
Maybe we should require that. I don't know.
Seeing no other member questions, any other public testimony? Representative Olson, do you want to close your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll renew my motion that we send it to Ways and Means.
Representative Olson renews his motion for House File 1220 to be moved to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. And just for good measure, one more bill, House File 1219. Representative Olson, please introduce this bill, and we are going, again, to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 1219 be sent to Ways and Means. This bill is essentially the other side of the token from what Representative Kraft was talking about, how we want to encourage people to buy Minnesota vehicles even if they live outside of our state, right? Because in this, the previous bill was helping Minnesota residents with their vehicle purchases. This one would help outside residents better and more easily purchase vehicles in the state of Minnesota. Currently, the law says that you have you have 31 days to get your license, your vehicle license transferred into the state in which you reside. So if you buy a Minnesota vehicle and you live in Iowa, you have 31 days to get your Iowa license plate on there, or else your dealer plate, the plate that you've received while purchasing the vehicle, the temporary plate, is null and void, and then you're subject to any form of legal issues. What this would do is it would extend that 31-day limit to 60 days in order to provide notably slower state departments like Iowa. You know, we got to slow things down for them. I know I live closer to the border, so we got to slow things down a little bit for them to give them extra time, and that's okay. It's okay. Everyone moves at their own speed. And so that's what this whole project is. The whole idea behind this is just providing non-Minnesota residents the ability to transfer their vehicles into the state in which their home of record is in 60 days. Other states give even longer. Some states give up to 90 days. So this is just make it easier for people in other states to purchase Minnesota vehicles.
Thank you. I see Ms. Dewar again with us on House File 1220.
Yeah. Amanda Dewar, Director of Government Affairs at the Minnesota Automobile.
1219.
Yep.
I got to flip the page here. I'm sorry. So we're on House File 1219. Please introduce yourself and then share your testimony.
Amanda Dewar, Director of Government Affairs at the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. And this is the simplest one of
the three that I've been here. So, Representative Olson did a great job explaining the issue. So currently, when an out-of-state customer purchases a vehicle in Minnesota, they receive this temporary 31-day permit to go get their vehicle titled and registered in their home state. Unfortunately, sometimes 31 days isn't enough for the other state to complete the transactions. And in those situations, issues may arise for the dealership, because we're still shown as the owner, especially if the new owner acquires a bunch of traffic tickets. So this bill would simply extend out the state permit from 31 to 60 days. And last year, actually, before I was in this role, the legislature extended the in-state temporary permit from 31 to 60 days. So this would just bring parity to the two permits to get your vehicles titled and registered. So happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Appreciate that testimony and insight. Are there any member questions or any members of the public that wish to testify? Seeing no members of the public, no member testimony. Representative Olson, next year I just suggest putting together a big omnibus Olson bill.
What a wonderful idea, Mr. Chair. I'll keep that in the back of my mind. I would like to renew my motion that this be sent to Ways and Means as well, because there is a small cost to it.
Representative Olson renews motion for House File 1219 to the Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Congratulations. Now our favorite bill of the day, or at least mine. There's a little controversy on the speed limit, but I think we can figure it out. Chair Cagle, thank you for authoring this bill. Please introduce House File 712 for us. We will be laying it over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 712 to be laid over for possible inclusion. So in December 2012, MnDOT released a report, Minnesota Moving Ahead Transportation and Funding Finance for the next 20 years. In the report, MnDOT projected the long-term unfunded needs of the state transportation system and provided recommendations for the revenue options to close the gap. But the report recommended that savings generated from greater efficiencies in department operations and delivery of projects should help close the long-term funding gap as well. The report suggested about 15% of the long-term funding needs of the system should be met through increased efficiencies. Reflective of this, in 2014, the legislature began requiring the department to meet an annual efficiency cost-saving goal within the state road construction program. In 2017, the efficiency legislation was updated to require the department annually to implement efficiencies up to 15% of the appropriation made from the Trunk Highway Fund above base for fiscal year 18-19. And this is not a mandate to the department to find savings through cuts. It doesn't require MnDOT to do more with less. It actually is the opposite. It's additive. So it's asking them to do more with more. It sets the expectation that the taxpayers will get more work and projects out of every new dollar put a trunk highway. So as part of this work, the department is required to summarize and document in its annual major projects report work on efficiencies for the previous year, noting savings generated, the projects from which those savings were derived, and specific details about the kinds of efficiencies employed to generate savings. And so to date, since 2014, MnDOT has reported a total efficiency of more than $900 million. And so what this proposal would do is just ask that those efficiencies be accounted for and then put into the Quarters of Commerce program. There are a couple I know there's at least one testifier here, if you'd like to answer any questions. But basically, that is my bill.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. I appreciate that explanation. Very good. We have on the list Mr. Bentley Graves. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank Chair Cagle and Representative Myers, and I think also Representative Norris, who I know isn't on the committee, but for bringing this bill forward. This issue of MnDOT's work on efficiencies is something that we've been partnering with the department on for many, many years, actually going back even beyond 2012, back to the funding bill in 2008. Which included in it some basic expectations for MnDOT with regard to efficiencies that kind of sat on the shelf for some time until we got to about 2014 when the legislature for the first time put these expectations in statute and then changed, as the chair said, updated them in 2017. But essentially what this does is, as the chair said, is try to stretch the dollars being invested in our transportation system. And the department, I think to its credit, has done significant good work in this respect for many, many years. And has cataloged, as the chair said, almost $900 in efficiency related, $900 million, I'm sorry, inefficiency related savings thus far. What this would do is kind of take that work to the next step and find a home for those dollars within the transportation infrastructure we have in this state. Right now, those dollars are kind of being absorbed into the larger work that MnDOT is doing. But I think in many respects, a move like this would make those dollars more real and help kind of spur on the work of the department and also kind of building greater transparency and accountability for that work that's been going on for many, many years. So, again, very much appreciate the bill being brought forward. This is, like I said, a new twist on the work that they've been doing before, but not something that is completely new to the department. The department has reinvested efficiency savings several times over the past number of years into specific projects, even going so far as in, I think, a 2018-19 budget the department put forward as part of their funding proposal to the legislature that efficiency, the 15% efficiency mechanism, be built into the work that they do. So, like I said, they've done very good work on this. This is merely an effort to kind of take that next step in that work. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Cagle. Appreciate the opportunity. Happy to answer questions.
Mr. Bentley, I want to thank you as kind of spearheading this since the time I've been in transportation and in the legislature. I first came in and we were looking at the funding gap back then, and I could understand a few different things, revenue raisers, things like that, but the efficiency part kind of made sense, but it's good to see it materialize in a bill that we can actually utilize this efficiency. Mr. Lee, is there, can you just give us a little bit on the fiscal note? If I understand there is no fiscal cost.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, in your packets is the fiscal note. You'll see no change in expenditures or savings to the department, but on the second page, you can see under the assumptions the discussion of the 15% of appropriations made annually from the Trunk Highway Fund that are available above base for the FY 2018-2019 that references the earlier statute that was amended, 174.53, and that assumption in how much that is of the base appropriation is about 90 million in, it was about 90 million in fiscal 2018 and 2019. And I should note, just for context in terms of corridors of commerce, the base appropriation for corridors of commerce is $25 million a year from the Trunk Highway Fund. And in addition to that Trunk Highway Fund appropriation, there has also occasionally been Trunk Highway bonding for corridors of commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Next, we have Mr. Josh Kantenrud-Hubinger from MnDOT. Welcome back, and thanks for joining us. For the record, you know, introduce yourself and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, Josh Kanatard-Hubinger, also KH, here to express some concerns from MnDOT. I'm the CFO at MnDOT about the bill. Everything that's been described so far is completely accurate. We've had a great relationship with Mr. Graves over the years on this efficiencies process, lots of great work with Co-Chair Cagle on kind of this transparency, what are we doing with that extra money. So appreciate the time to just express a couple concerns, maybe one programmatic and then one more technical. So like Mr. Lee said, right now that 15% translates to about $90 million. And that's true that it would not cost more money, but it would in effect take money that's currently planned for, say, pavement and bridge projects and redirect those to corridors of commerce. Our longer range plans largely focus on maintaining the system we have, so that would, in effect, reduce some of our performance outcomes for pavement and bridge over time. And then on the technical side, there are just some challenges, like both Co-Chair Cagle and Mr. Graves said. Right now, the process is we look backwards for that once-a-year report and identify how much in savings we were seeing from specific projects or programs, both in state road construction and on the ops and maintenance side, and come up with a number that's in that $90 million range. But it's not money that, as we realize it, we kind of set aside and then can send to something like Quarters of Commerce. So in practice, we might have some concerns with the language as written to you if this were to pass. But again, look forward to working with members in the committee going forward.
Thank you. Are there any member questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. Can you give me just an idea of some of those efficiencies, what they are?
Josh, Mr. Cage.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so I see Mr. Graves is pulling some details, but in that annual major highway projects report, it's itemized, I think it's pages like 50 through 70, somewhere in there. So we look at every project over a certain threshold. So it's $15 million for the Metro, $5 million for Greater Minnesota. And we go through and largely look for savings in like performance-based design, alternative technical concepts, value engineering, things like that, and take a best faith estimate at how much we save for those projects. In the most recent report is about 30 projects saved about $50 million in the state road construction area. And then we look more programmatically on the kind of ops and maintenance side. So things like our technology systems for the plows that help identify how much salt to put down saves us quite a bit of money. So there's about $15 million in savings on the kind of ops and maintenance side as well.
Thank Follow you, up, Chair. Representative Murphy, you good?
No, I'm good, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kraft, are you on the list? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had the same question as Representative Murphy, but I'm going to, we're on the same wavelength, amazing. your answer raised a separate question. So it's awesome that you guys are looking for savings. My question is, if you're supposed to look for 15% every year, like if you learn something 1 year, right? You know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And okay, you can do salting better or do like you apply it to the next, do you continue to apply it? So you're like, how does that work? Because it seems like 15% every year is great. But then the other question is, are you just, do the estimates get padded so you can hit the 15%? Thanks.
Mr. Kantenrud-Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative. So great question. We could spend a whole other hearing on how you bank efficiencies and at what point you retire them. It's kind of a hot topic for those who track this in other states as well. We do generally at a certain point retire some of them. So at a certain point, it's not a new best practice. It's the normal practice. And so you don't continue to give yourself credit for the same things. That being said, there tends to be enough unique projects where you really can look at the unique circumstances of that project and still save money. And again, it's largely on projects. Same thing is true, though, on the upside. At some point, if we're using MDSS for our plows, that's best practice and also the standard practice. So it is kind of a challenge for ongoing. And I'll just note that 15% is of the new money over base starting in 2018. So that number gets progressively bigger each year. And it gets progressively harder to meet as well. So in the early years of this requirement, say 2018 through 22, we were exceeding that 15% by double. And the last couple years, we have not met that 15% in that given year. Over the 7 years, we've basically doubled that 15%, but it's going to get harder.
Follow up, Representative Kraft.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Why is this process of figuring out how to save money, why isn't it built into the bids up front? Or is it just in, you know, like the appropriate an amount and then you go look to reduce it? Why isn't it look to reduce it and then ask for an amount?
Mr. Kantenrud-Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative. So again, right now the process is we're looking at projects for the SRC side, projects that are being let in that year. So for this most recent state fiscal year 24, it's projects let in 24, which means it's work that we've been doing for the last 4 to 5 years. Before we get to that actual award, what does the actual alternative design look like? And so it's from initial concept to what ultimately gets let. It's the difference between the two.
Thank you. Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. KH. I'm just going to call you that because it's easier. I would like to talk more offline at some point to really understand that efficiency thing. I just want to note that. But then also, would this bill impact our local programs or like at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative, so right now the way the language is written, it's 15% above base for the Trunk Highway Fund only. So all of these numbers we're throwing around are specific to kind of the MnDOT piece of the bigger pie.
Good. Thank you. And Mr. KH, you know, previously when we had you here to talk about the gap funding report, which I think is important, that's why we had you here, we'd asked you about this, and you thought at that point, if I understood the testimony, asked the question if this is something that could be achieved, that we could take that efficiency and transfer it and actually in the tangible purpose, which I think is the purpose of the bill that Chair Cagle has and I support. Did I misunderstand your testimony previously?
No, Mr. Chair. So there's two issues. So just want to make sure it's clear that there are trade-offs for right now that money is planned for other projects. So it would instead go to Quarters of Commerce. But the mechanics of getting it there, we would just need to work with Representative Cagle on the actual language. It probably would be easier to do a what was that number maybe a year or two ago, and then just take that off the top in a subsequent year. So there's just kind of a technical process for how we get that money to the right place when.
That's fantastic. Thanks for that clarification. Representative Cagle, did you have a question on that? Well, I would encourage and look forward to working on this with Chair Cagle and you to make that technical clarification. If you could share with us what your thoughts are. We're just laying this bill over. Mr. Bentley, appreciate your testimony. I don't know if you had anything else. Otherwise, no other member questions. Any other members of the public wishing to testify? Chair Cagle, we'll turn it back over to you to close the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, when I was first approached about this bill, I thought it was really interesting, and it really kind of continued on the work that I've been doing around transparency and efficiency. I'm really excited to see the Infrastructure Council get up and running here in the next few months, and so I think that will be a big help to Department of Transportation and other entities around the state on coordinating and collaborating on projects. One thing to note is I am a little bit leery about Corridors of Commerce because of the expansion piece of Corridors of Commerce. Again, I think, Mr. KH has told us many times that, you know, maintenance and operations is going to be our biggest lift in the next few years. And so, I'm just a little leery about adding capacity. And so if we could find a way to work within Corridors of Commerce without adding capacity, that'd be like awesome. So, and then the other thing is, this is another part of transparency as well. And so I think I've talked a lot about the distrust in government that's been building, making public servants and teachers and doctors and the media. There's been a lot of mistrust sowed in those professions that were normally very revered. And so the one little piece I can do is by restoring trust in government is just to get that transparency piece out. And so some of the other bills that will be coming forward will have some more transparency and accountability measures on them to kind of continue to do this work. And so I just really appreciate the willingness that I've had from a lot of members to talk about some of the transparency and efficiency issues. And I think this is another good one where we can kind of see where our money is going. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. I appreciate your leadership on this bill and those issues. I think that's the last of our work. We will, House File 712 is laid over. And then for the public, we've got the next meeting is Wednesday, March 26, 2025. And that agenda and items, I believe, are posted. And then we'll proceed on that, but we are getting close to the time where we roll out, even without targets at this point. We'll be working on putting together an omnibus bill of all the stuff that we've talked about. Hopefully we will have targets by then, otherwise we will proceed in uncharted territory. But that is kind of the roadmap of where we're headed, and I look forward to seeing everybody next Wednesday. Meeting is adjourned.